From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on this Monday morning. Hope that you are doing very well out there. You have some electricity. I'm sure that would be very, very nice as well, and that you are having a fantastic start to your week. As you would have heard in the ads, it is also Purim this week, so I hope that you are getting ready for that as well. We've got a little bit of a sort of government parliamentary-centric show. As always, we are going to be chatting to Rob Hutchinson at about 10, talking about what is going on in Parliament, what are some of the bills that are coming up. But before that, we have on our first interview for today, we have Ivor Chipkin. He is the director of the New South Institute, and he is going to be talking to us about public service. Now, if you've ever had to get a driver's license card, go to Home Affairs, pay your TV license, any of these times you would have been dealing with a public servant. And I think sometimes that we feel like in South Africa we don't necessarily have the most efficient or the most effective public service. So we're going to be finding out if that's actually the case, and if not, what can we do to improve it? So chatting to us about that today is Ivor Chipkin from New South Institute. Ivor, welcome to Chai FM.
Benji, good morning. It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So let's maybe start off there. You know, we hear a lot in the media about the amount we pay for our public service in South Africa. There's always arguments about if they're being paid or not, or paid enough or not. There are questions about cutting, especially now with budget being redone this week. So let's start with that question of where does our civil service rate in terms of efficiency and effectiveness and bang for buck in terms of what we get in South Africa?
Yeah, tough question. And it's thank you for having a discussion on public service questions. I think most people sort of tend to glaze over when you raise these sorts of questions of public administration, especially if one's framed like that. These are the sort of the fundamental questions which affect our everyday life. So getting a grip on these sorts of issues are really, really key. But also, questions of how government actually operates underpin almost everything. Corruption, our understanding of how the state works and everything. So it's really important to understand these sorts of issues. Comparatively speaking, my own sense is the South African public service is very uneven in the way it works across various departments. But on the whole, and this is going to be a surprise to many of your listeners, I'm sure, there are thousands of very capable people in our public administrations, people trying to do their jobs honestly, with commitment, with sincerity. But they are generally involved in environments which are so toxic and so dysfunctional that it's very difficult for them to operate in good faith. And that is the tragedy of the current situation. So it's not so much around public servants themselves as individuals. I think there are so many, many thousands of, as I said, very capable and good people. But I do think there are very difficult problems related to the structure of structures in which they operate, the character of the departments, the environments in which they operate. And it's worth thinking about that in relation to what's happening in the US, because I think if you allow me to digress, you asked for a comparative question. So if you look at the US history in the organization of the government, there's some major reforms which start at the end of the 19th century, but really take form in the 1920s under Roosevelt. And really, it's a process of professionalizing their public administration. Your listeners might be familiar with an expression, Tammany Hall, which was a kind of politics where political parties got to appoint the public servants directly. In the 1920s, the US moves away from that such a system. In South Africa, we've gone in the exact opposite direction. From the beginning of the transition, the ANC was faced with a dilemma, how to deal with an apartheid era public service, which it didn't trust to implement its policies. More importantly, it even regarded the public service as a potential source of counter-revolution. And yet it couldn't fire public servants because of some of the terms of the negotiated settlement. So it chose to do something quite extraordinary by comparative international standards. It chose to politicize the public administration in law. So South Africa's first major legislative drive was the Public Service Act of 1994, even prior to the Constitution. And in Section 3 of that Act, it does something quite incredible by international standards. It allows politicians to recruit all public servants. So all public servants in South Africa are potentially appointed through a political process. And it also gives the politicians, the president, ministers at national level and MECs at provincial level, it gives them discretion over all operational decisions inside departments. So in our government departments, politicians recruit public servants and they have discretion over operational decisions unless they choose to delegate those functions to the to senior public servants. So you've got what the National Development Plan called rather euphemistically tension in the political administrative interface. What it means is ongoing almost civil war inside departments between politicians and heads of departments and director generals wanting to exercise their roles in good faith. So we've built into our public administrations this fundamental tension, this fundamental contradiction, you like, between the political role and the administrative role, and that has served us very, very, very badly over the last 30 years. So a lot of the dysfunction in our governments, in our licensing departments, in our provincial administrations, in our municipalities, often relates to this fundamental contradiction at the heart of our government.
We're talking today to Ivor Chipkin. He's from the New South Institute. And that was a brief overview of what we're discussing, this issue of public administration and how it works. So we've just had an introduction into the basics of how South Africa works. And after we come back from the break, we're going to be going more deeply into what that means. You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. We're talking to Ivor Chipkin today. He is from the New South Institute, and we're talking about the issue of government and how to make it work. If you want to be part of the conversation, 061-895-1019, that is the WhatsApp line, and you can ask him anything that you would like regarding this. Now, Ivor, you kind of spoke before the break about how we sort of structured our administration here. And I mean, I don't want to make this about the Americans, but that's, you know, it eventually always becomes about the Americans. You have at the moment this idea of like kind of the deep state. And when people talk about that, what they mean, I think, in some respects, is you have a politician, they come in, and then they kind of can set policy, but then, you know, the bureaucracy sort of just does whatever it wants. And so you end up having people bringing in political advisors. And there seems to be this tension anyway. So is there sort of an international best practice about what level of powers you give the politicians and where they should intervene and where they shouldn't? So that on the one hand, you have the democratic will of the people, but on the other hand, you don't have this kind of situation that you were talking about of this tension inside the bureaucracy.
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. It's the age-old question of government and of bureaucracy. It has no solution. It can only be managed. That's my feeling. I mean, the notion of the deep state is very interesting. If you look at the language of Trump and Elon Musk, this idea, which is precisely in the way which you've described it, is there's a sense that there is there's a sort of parliamentary system in the U.S., but there is a core civil service in the U.S., which in Donald Trump's terms is kind of captured by woke left-wing liberals, which is resistant to the policies of a conservative government and will deliberately subvert conservative policies, wait for the government to pass, and then carry on as it's always been functioning in this kind of woke direction. And so what he's trying to do, therefore, is trying to purge, essentially, and close down, in some cases, whole civil service administrations like USAID, for example, on the basis that these are actually unreformable. Well, in South Africa, we had a similar sort of moment, and that was 1994 when the ANC came to power, with a sense, again, that the South African public service, the public administration, was so captured by the apartheid state that it was largely unreformable, and yet South Africa was stuck with it. So the ANC had its own, if you like, its own conception of the deep state. The deep state was linked to the apartheid era bureaucracy. They didn't use that language of deep state. They called it reactionary or counter-revolutionary. And so we have a different language in South Africa, but it was essentially a similar idea. And we chose this idea of politicizing the public administration in order to deal with it, much like I think the U.S. is beginning to do now. And if I had any influence in the U.S., I would say be very, very wary of what you're doing, because the South African example is not a good example to follow.
So let me ask you one more thing about that, because we talk about you kind of spoke about this idea of giving the politicians a lot of control earlier, but there's, to my mind, and when you talk about the public sector in particular in South Africa, when you get into these sorts of debates, there's two other layers which immediately come to the fore. The first one is the question of BEE and the way in which people are chosen for the positions. And the second and perhaps far more important question is the question of cadre deployment, right? The idea that not only are the politicians choosing director generals and other people, but that actually they need to be part of the ANC in order to do this. So it's not only that it's just someone who's connected to a particular minister or whatever, but it's actually the party line all the way through the bureaucracy. What is your sense about that kind of critique of how we do the public service here?
Yeah, I mean, I think these are all fantastic questions, and I didn't really answer your earlier question, which I would like to come back to about how to get this right, because I think there are ways of getting it more right than wrong. You put your finger on two key issues. So cadre deployment in and of itself is not really the problem. As I say, cadre deployment piggybacks, if you like, on the Public Service Act, which makes political parties appointing people into the public service legal through the Public Service Act. That's section seven that I mentioned to you earlier. So the idea that political parties want to have their people in key positions, well, that's just kind of straightforward. All political parties want to deploy their people into key positions in government to get their policies implemented. Usually, though, there are very firm barriers to direct deployment. So many countries across the African there are huge reforms across the African continent, for example, but standard practice in most European countries, in many South American countries, Brazil, for example, to have very, very firm guardrails against that kind of direct employment. One of them, for example, is to have civil servants appointed through a process that is completely independent of politics. A professional process, a civil service exam, for example. So to make sure that even if you are appointing someone who's politically partisan to a party, to make sure that they cannot be appointed through a political party process, so that they at least come into those positions with the right kinds of skills, the right kind of experience. We don't have anything like that in South Africa currently, although, and hopefully you'll ask me about the current reform agenda. That's part of the reform agenda which is being proposed currently, is to introduce those sorts of barriers. But in South Africa currently, we have no such protection. So political parties, by law, are able to appoint people directly into key positions, and those people need to have no necessarily qualifications related to those positions, and certainly no experience related to those positions. So cadre deployment often means appointing people that don't have the skills and don't have the experience to do the jobs in key areas. And that's really come back to bite us.
So let's talk about the biting process, because I want to come back I wanted to have the discussion about how we fix it. But I think we maybe don't spend enough time really thinking about the cost of what that means. I mean, I think sometimes people are so sick of the government that they don't even want to think about it. So, we'll just privatize or get the private security, something like that. What is the cost of having a civil service that operates in this way?
Well, we know this very acutely. We've come to learn this a really, really bad way in South Africa over the last 15 years, since around 2010, 2015 in particular. We know this in regard to the sort of ongoing electricity outages. We know this through water outages. We know this through the crisis of logistics in South Africa, the crisis of Transnet. because these kinds of this politicized structure allowed the Zuma administration in particular, for example, to make political appointments in our state-owned enterprises. So there have been some really bad policy decisions made in the early 2000s around Eskom and the restructuring of Eskom. But these got compounded during the Jacob Zuma period by highly politicized appointments on the Eskom board and inside the Eskom executive, Brian Molefe and people like that, making extraordinary decisions which have come to ultimately cripple key state and enterprises. So it has a very, very direct and material bearing on our everyday life. It's not just a kind of abstract of a broad sort of abstract notion of a bad government. It has an immediate concrete consequence for our everyday life. Water in our taps, electricity in our lights and cables. It affects everything. Policing, the weakness of the South African of policing in South Africa, in our hospitals, public health, for example, in every area, potholes on our streets, for example, huge backlogs in maintenance, for example. In PRASA, for example, you had the head of engineering who was someone who had misled the institution around the qualifications, and turned out not only did they not have a PhD in engineering, but they had matric. I think in the end, there was a question mark about whether they even had matric. You had someone with a matric at best running the engineering unit of one of the large state and enterprises. It's just extraordinary. Similar situation in Johannesburg with the roads department. So it has very, very direct and material consequences. And what it also does is it alienates sound professional administrators trying to do their jobs, because they are often overlooked by or sidelined or marginalized by people that are politically connected who then rise above them in departments. So it has a really toxic effect on both our lives as consumers and individuals and as citizens, but also on the life of sincere public servants themselves.
So let's start talking then about the solutions. You and the New South Institute have been putting forward this a different approach to how we could be doing things, particularly pushing through a sort of some parliamentary changes. So talk to us a little bit about what it is, your approach is, and how you're going about doing it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we like to be, there's this tendency in South Africa to be gloomy about anything related to government or parliament, but there are lots of very exciting developments in South Africa. And I have to say, some of these developments have been led by really progressive public servants in key departments, including the Department of Public Service and Administration, for example. Departments one doesn't hear much, but the former Director General Yuliswa Makasi, who I'm very proud to say has now joined us at the NSI as our new head of public service, one of our programs. But we're under her tenure at the department, helped develop a reform of the Public Service Act, which made it into Parliament, and incredibly, in February this year, passed in the National Assembly. There's still lots of work to do to get it made into law, passed as an act. Has to get through the National Council of Provinces, and I guess it has to be signed off by the President. But nonetheless, it's made. The first hurdle has been crossed. And what the Public Service Amendment Bill does, it reforms or addresses that section of the Act which I mentioned before, which gives politicians the right to appoint public servants and gives them undue authority over administrative or operational questions inside departments. And it shifts the balance of power away from politicians back to senior administrators, director generals and heads of departments. I don't think this is a silver bullet by any means, but it's the beginning of a major structural change inside government. And I think it's incredibly progressive. It's hugely important. And it has the potential to restructure the way incentives work inside government. So I think that's very exciting. There are also a whole lot of other proposals around professionalization, introducing, strengthening the National School of Government, which currently exists, making it introducing a very elementary examination, entrance exam into the public servant, so that not anybody can become a public servant, but also to tighten the conditions under which someone can be promoted, so that they need to have passed certain qualifications, they're certain to have certain kind of experience. None of that really currently exists. There are a whole lot of major reforms that are needed at what we call the center of government, the relationship between the presidency, the Department of Public Service Administration, the Public Service Commission, and some other institutions, which need to be resolved, and we're working to develop proposals on that ground. But Benji, taken together, what is really exciting about what's going on currently is that there are a whole range of really important, really progressive initiatives around addressing weaknesses in the organization of government. And these are not just kind of fanciful things which, you know, South Africa industry talks about around the future. These are things which are happening as we speak now.
So let me ask you this is why it's about that, right? Getting it through the parliament's obviously a big deal. But historically, when you start to do these sorts of reforms, you also start to get sort of pushback, right? And I imagine that there's probably quite a lot of interests from the unions to people who are potentially doing business with the state to a range of other actors who want policy control, etc., who might be opposed to this kind of thing because it sort of takes power away from their ability to do things. So I'm kind of interested just in the politics of it, especially in this moment of a GNU when the government is now composed of lots of parties. What does that sort of dynamic do to trying to get through a reform like this?
Yeah, so I think the GNU is a moment of great promise because I think there's a growing realization both within the ANC, also within the DA, and within other parties, in the era of coalition governments, if parties have when they're briefly in government have the right to appoint public servants, in the era of coalition governments, this could completely crash public administrations if each political party can appoint its own people. And then the coalition is unstable or doesn't last very long. You have this tremendous turnover of public servants. I think everyone is realizing that this would be really, really bad news for South Africa. So within and amongst political parties, interestingly enough, there is, it varies from strong support to ambivalence to these reforms. Ambivalence is not opposition. So I think politically speaking, there is an opening which is very promising for these reforms to get through. I don't think there's strong political opposition to these reforms as such, but you've identified two core constituencies which are potentially opposed, and I think we have to address those. There are certainly politicians in the provinces that enjoy having this kind of control in administrations, MECs, for example, in some provinces. And I think they are a site of potential opposition, and we have to think about how to deal with them. Of course, there are businesses that have benefited enormously from having their politicians in power who are able then to direct or instruct senior civil servants to award contracts in a particular direction. So there is a political economy, like a kind of a business environment, which is potentially opposed to this environment. So I think there's a lots of work in having to anticipate this resistance and think about ways in which we can overcome it. The way the NCOP works, there are 9 provinces, as we all know. We need to get the bill passed in 5 of these provinces for it to become law, well, before it goes to the president for assent. So we're currently working on a strategy to lobby those provincial legislatures, to build support in those legislatures, to explain the advantages and the importance of these bills, so that the requisite support is built. You also mentioned the unions. The unions are also very interesting. Don't forget, when everything goes wrong, the first people that get blamed are public servants. Oh, everyone's incompetent or everyone lacks skills. Well, those are the union's members who are taking the flak for the dysfunction in government. And yet many of those union members are people genuinely committed to doing their jobs with integrity. So I think there is there's lots of opportunity to win the unions to support these reforms as well. I think they are very nervous about some of these reforms for what it will mean to their members, but I think on the whole these reforms will be in their members' favour. So just, I think this is a very fluid space, but there's lots going for these reforms currently.
So just a kind of a technical question, because I think as South Africans we've sort of, up until a few years ago, no one ever heard of the NCOP because it didn't matter, right? It was a sort of this rubber stamp. But now that with the way that the country's going, it actually becomes an important site of actual democratic oversight. So is it correct to say that the representatives of the NCOP are from the different provinces? You don't have to get, you have to get their assent, but do you also have to get each province to actually sign off on the bill for their provincial law as well?
Yeah, don't forget, in terms of our constitutional structure, there's the National Assembly. But for certain kinds of bills, which affect the provinces as well, they have to be signed off by provincial legislatures. And legislatures are not just rubber stamps. They're supposed to be fully functional parliaments in their own right at the provincial level. So you need to get majority support in those legislatures for those bills to be passed. So it's not enough just to have it passed in the National Assembly. So we need support of provincial legislatures. As I mentioned, in terms of the constitution, for a bill to pass in the NCOP, you need 5 provincial legislatures to support it. So majority of provinces, but not all of them. So you don't need all 9 provinces, you need 5 of the 9. So that's what we're working on, trying to get at least 5 of those provincial legislatures to pass the amendment to the public service bill.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. We're talking to Dr. Ivor Chipkin today, talking about his work at the New South Institute to try and reform the public sector.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
Now, we've been chatting today to Dr. Ivor Chipkin. He is from the New South Institute, talking about reforming the civil service. Ivor, if people want more information about the process, want to understand what these bills saying in detail, etc., where can they find more information?
I suppose the first place to start would be our website, nsi.org.za, newsouthinstitute.org.za. We have a whole program on public service reform where they can read documents, understand what's going on. Also, what's current, and they should be a lookout for it, there are public participation processes are starting in the various provinces. I think in Gauteng there is already an announcement, so people should look out for those. They're very, very important to get involved in that regard. There are a whole range of processes happening in Parliament as well through the Portfolio Committee on Public Service Administration. They should look out for those announcements as well. And then we will be relaying that information as well through our websites and through other platforms as well. So yes, there's a lot going on at the moment. People should be aware of it. We've got an information sharing session soon. I'll share the details. I'll share the dates. It's in March. It'll be a public event which people are welcome to come and participate in.
All right, well then,
and I'll share all those details. I'll share that advert with you as soon as after this meeting.
Okay, fantastic. No, we can definitely put that on the socials, and then so people can participate. Ivor Chipkin, thank you so much for joining us. Really interesting, and good luck with the work that you're doing on this important issue.
Great, and thank you for having me and having a discussion on this topic. Great, thank you.
My pleasure. There we go. It was Dr. Ivor Chipkin there from the New South Institute talking about how we can make government more efficient. I'm Benji Shulman. This is 101.9 High FM.